You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Whoa, what's going on here? Is this two episodes in one day? Blake, you've gone crazy. What are you doing putting out two episodes in one day? Well, I'll explain that to you. But first, I need to tell you about something called Sinusoid Pro Audio Couture. Let me tell you. They say couture, they mean it. They have a custom cable builder on their website that will allow you to configure any cable exactly the way you need it. You can pick the brand of the cable, you can pick the color of the TechFlex, the brand of the connector, or the style of connector. Basically, anything you could want to modify about a cable, you can modify it in that custom cable builder, and Sinusoid will take care of you. 100% guaranteed for 100 years. 100-year warranty. So unless you are a member of some sort of undead army, you're not going to have any problems. Just go to sinusoid.com, check out their custom cable builder, and build the cable of your dreams today. That is www. You don't do W's anymore, do you? It's not a thing. Just go to sinusoid.com, tell them that I sent you, and treat yourself. Okay. What's up with this double episode thing? Well, if you've seen today's earlier episode, you know that it's actually an old episode. It's an episode with Robert Keeley. I explain why it's out again and all that stuff in the preamble to that episode. So if you're curious about that, you can hop back one episode and check it out. But I'll explain what's going on here. So on this episode, I went up to Cascade Cigar and Tobacco here in Portland and sat down with a rock and roll legend. This is Mike Mitchell from the band The Kingsmen, who back in the day achieved most of their success through the cover of Louie Louie that was investigated for obscenity by the FBI. And they were a huge, huge band. They've toured for a lot of years. That's still the thing that people know them the most for, but they had a lot of involvement with Sun Amps and some other things that we talk about in this episode. It's a little bit shorter than normal, as Mike didn't have too much time. And we just kind of were able to just throw it together at the last minute and make it happen. So, yes, I sat down with him. It's going to sound a little bit different, but it actually worked out okay. There was a large fan slash, like, smoke eater thing running. And so I had to dial out as much of that as I can. And it kind of made our voices sound a little bit funny, but it's a lot better than hearing the big fan thing. So sometimes we podcasters just have to deal with the environments that are handed to us. But yeah, Mike Mitchell is a great guy, really fun to talk to. I would love to have him back on and get some more road stories or something, but we had a great conversation, and I think you guys are really going to enjoy it, and we got to treasure these guys while they're still around, got to get them to tell all their tales on podcasts and whatnot. But no, I really enjoyed this. I think you guys will too. And yeah, without further ado, on with the show. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Tone Mob podcast, the show about guitar tone and the people behind it. On this episode, we got a little bit different going on. I'm here at Cascade Cigar in, well, I guess it's technically Portland, right?
Yes, it is.
All right.
Happy Valley.
Oh, and thanks, Jess. Just brought over a stogie. All right. This is shaping up to be a great podcast.
It's a place to have them in town for sure.
And I'm here also with Mike Mitchell, who you probably know best from being a member of the Kingsmen.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And I know he's done other things that we probably just aren't aware of because of conspiracy theories or something.
I have children, so I've done other things.
But yeah, so, I mean, a lot of you have heard of the Kingsmen, and I'm sure you know about their influence and the roots, so I don't know if we need to go too far back into like everything that happened, but in your
better go back to Louie Louie.
Yeah,
that's the only thing a lot of people remember.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Go back to Louie Louie. You tell me where you became involved with the band and how that kind of took off from there.
Well, we started the band, and a little bit of history. We're together. This is our 60th year.
Nice.
Playing wow. Music, and we were going into high school, and I was playing country western music out at the convention center on the 100th anniversary of Oregon. And in the main hall that's next to the country hall that was out there, Rick Nelson was, well, Ricky Nelson back then, was opening for Roy Rogers.
Oh, wow.
So I sang my songs on the country stage and happened to walk over and sneak in the back door and walked right by Jimmy Burton playing guitar. And it kind of influenced me into electric guitar instead of acoustic. So I got an electric guitar, and a friend of mine from high school that we went into, and I started this band called the Kingsmen. Three of us initially, then we got a fourth guy from the school and played around the school a little bit before we got a fifth guy, keyboard player, and he was 15 years old. So he wasn't allowed to tour with us. His parents wouldn't let him go. We ended up switching a couple of members right off the bat and played around and ate a lot of cold chicken dinners and played a lot of freebies around for a few years. And in about this time in 1963, we went in the studio to cut a song to get a job on a cruise ship. And we cut four songs, and Louie Louie just happened to be one of the four songs. The entire recording session cost us $36.
Wow.
We were in and out of there in an hour.
Oh, man.
So it was just first take, go. And from there on, everything else in the world happened. We started recording, started traveling. Interesting story about gear is that our bass player's name was Norm Sundholm. Mm-hmm. He created an amplifier called Sun Amps. Mm-hmm. Now, Sun Amps were bigger and louder than anything that was being manufactured at the time. So I had a couple of 100 watts and about 415s that I played through. And I used to hit a chord and blow my pant legs forward. It had enough power. So
that's
we
awesome.
Were just a power band playing rock and roll and having fun. It's all 60 years of fun. I've mm-hmm. had a great life. So a couple of the local boys, after a couple of years of doing this around the country, some of the local boys, Jimi Hendrix came down and got some of the amps, started playing them around. And Jimmy was loud enough to where you couldn't get away from Jimmy's sound, because he put speakers up in the seats in coliseums and places and auditoriums. And so you got to hear Jimmy without feedback or the slapback off the back of the arena. You got to hear direct Jimmy from wherever you were sitting.
That's a pretty smart idea.
He gave his old gear to Billy Gibbons, an acquaintance of mine, and loved Billy Gibbons and the guys. And he gave his old gear to them. So all of a sudden, there were a couple, three of us that had Sun gear playing around the country. So along come the Stones, wanted some of them. The Who wanted some of them. Basically, the big bands went to Sun before Marshall came out and kind of took over that industry. And pretty much our whole career was just slam, bam, and loud, and knock you down with sound. And just a ton of fun. Just a great time.
That's it's interesting that Sun is actually something I really wanted to talk to you about, being since this is supposed to be about gear and things. Sometimes it ventures into other territories. But I knew that you guys kind of are what propelled that brand forward. And a lot of people don't know that Sun was a Portland-based or Portland area-based company. A lot of people, they don't realize that, which is kind of weird for locals, right?
It's like, right, yeah.
We've always kind of known that. But what I wonder if you followed a lot of what you were talking about, Suns being bigger and louder than just about everything else, that seemed to just kind of hold true for the entirety of the brand. And I don't know if you've noticed the recent uptake in some of the extremely heavy genres, like really paying attention to Sun and buying vintage Sun gear. Like some of the extreme metal genres are focusing on Sun Model T's and Beta Leads.
Are
and
they
things.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they've like totally, they went from being really affordable like on the used market to now they're pretty expensive in
a lot of
cases. Yeah, wow. Especially the Model Ts. The Model Ts are going for upwards of $3,000.
Wow, I wish I'd have kept mine.
Yeah. Right. it's kind of crazy. But the sound is kind of, I think what those guys have adopted it for is different than what it was intended use was,
right,
type of thing. Because I think a lot of them are just playing, they have such high headroom and they goose them with several fuzz pedals and tune to, you know.
Well, you had to because Sun was known for being 98% clear, only 2% distortion out of 100 watts.
Yeah.
So you had to add pedals to them if you wanted any distortion at all because they were just clean and clear. Norm, who started the company, walked away from the company right in its heyday and gave it to his brother and his dad, and they ran the company. And Conrad Sunholm still makes a Conrad amplifier to this day. Makes
right.
a great mm-hmm. little amplifier for small club use and that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And they're nice little amps. But Conrad ran the company, and I think Conrad was pretty much responsible for a lot of the later models of Sun.
Oh, okay. Huh. Okay.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, he's still around here locally too, isn't he?
Yeah, he is.
Yeah. We got to try to rope him into one of these conversations one of these days.
He's a very interesting guy, very talented.
Yeah. So, going back to, you know, you're talking about your experiences and being, you know, kind of the biggest, loudest band around at the time. Did you guys, like, think about what you were doing? Or was it just like, we want to play big and loud? It had a lot of more impact than I think what people realized at the time, to the point where some people refer to you guys as almost the first punk rock band.
Well, we were that loud.
Yeah.
For mm-hmm. sure. For us, it was just fun. It was like a party every night. And we played 6 nights a week, played 4 hours a night, traveled 500 miles a day, went through 3 Greyhound buses, and finally retired all the buses and that kind of travel.
Mm-hmm.
And now, fortunately, it's mostly airplanes and we're pretty well taken care of.
Nice.
Being the older guys.
Yeah.
The much older guys.
Yeah.
But, no, it was a great time. It was just a party every night. So we went through the Coliseum series, all the big convention centers and all of that. Worked our way through the down through the college market and played all the colleges, all the major colleges in the country
mm-hmm.
at one time or another. And then down through the ballrooms, the old, old ballrooms that are still several of them here in town that we played starting out, and we've gone back and played them again. And now it's pretty much wherever you want to throw a big party, we're available. And we're still working. I mean, we've got several jobs coming up in the next month or so. We only work in the summertime, though, now.
Yeah.
We take the winters off, which is nice. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And are you all still around here in the Portland
area? There's three of us here in Portland, one in Salem, and one in Seattle. There's six of us now, one in Grants Pass.
Okay.
Oh.
So we're all
close-ish,
northwest kind of. Yeah.
So that works.
Pretty cool.
So playing that long, and you've seen probably just about every venue under the sun, no pun intended.
Right.
And you've probably seen, you know, all of these different gear trends come and go with the ages. Like, what is something you've seen remain consistent? Is there anything that like has just always been there since day one?
For me, I can only tell you for me, I think just in the amplifier business, I think Fender amplifiers have been the most consistent.
Okay.
Marshall has done what Marshall does. Box, all these other guys have their own, everybody has their own spot that they go through. Fender's pretty much remained with their Stratocaster guitars and the country guys playing them, the rock guys, the blues guys really picked up on them. That's the most consistent as far as amplifiers the world changes and it goes on and on. The electronics are incredible. The pedals have become a different world.
Yeah, that's
from pedal boards
to,
I mean, some of the pedal boards take longer to set up than amplifiers or staging or anything else. So me, I use one little booster pedal is all I use. And I've gone back to the 50s, and I use a Fender cabinet and an old Fender Bassman head. And then I boost the hell out of the signal, and that's all I use.
You know, what kind of booster is it? Is it a...
I don't know. It's a booster.
It's
a booster. Right. And it just boosts the signal. It doesn't really change anything.
Oh, it's kind of a clean boost.
Yeah. So I run a lot of things through 10-inch speakers now instead of 12s and 15s. So okay. And with it, because everything's amplified now, everything's mic'd, and so it's a whole different world than what we played in.
Right.
Which is great. I mean, good for the kids. Mm-hmm. You know, you can sit with a set of headphones on now and practice in your bedroom. I made my parents crazy playing in the house.
Yeah, so did we.
Yeah.
And I made my wife crazy.
Uh-huh.
And you know, everybody else. You know, it's something about playing at an incredible volume. It's, you know, realistically, it's kind of stupid. But it's one of the best feelings on the planet for those that have done it. Like, when you've stood in front of serious wattage, cranked up, and you just hit a D or something.
Oh yeah,
it's and like you say, your pants blow forward.
It's just movement of the air is just
going through your body.
So
it
powerful.
Changes your bloodstream and everything else. It changes your heart rate, everything. It changes the intonation on the guitar neck, the way that you hit a chord, the way you hit single strings.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Power is fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you were talking about, you know, when you were starting out and it being a party every night.
Mm-hmm.
And but that's a lot of work too. Or did you see it that way?
No, it was a party every night. The only thing that was a pain is the travel.
Yeah.
And when you're playing 6 nights a week for 6 weeks at a time, and taking a week or two off. I mean, we were playing 40 weeks out of the year for 5 years.
Oh, wow.
And you finally just get burned out, not from the music, but from the travel.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and plus music was changing in that 5-year period of time.
And at the time, it was probably hard to keep track. Like, you'd be gone, and you were gone. You know, you didn't have a phone that playing your music
no
to
phones.
You.
No
nothing.
Yeah.
You know, like... So you might come back around and from your break and go, what's this new sound we're hearing now? Like, we didn't even know that existed.
Well, and the problem with the way our career went is that we were never allowed enough time off to get to... We didn't have any really great songwriters in the band. So we relied on copying a lot of other people's music, and we didn't have record time. They'd come out and record us live one show or another show, or we'd stop in a studio and record. We had a producer that was, if we all ended together, it was a take. So it was that kind of recording.
Wow.
And the quality, and the problem with power amps and recording back then is that the microphones couldn't handle that much power.
Mm-hmm.
And they would literally shut down the microphone when you hit a hard enough chord.
Yeah.
So it was a really tricky thing to get a sound, a decent sound, in a good microphone. It just was too much power for the microphones at the time. The technology at the time hadn't caught up with the power.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's still, to this day, is, you know, most recording engineers would prefer somebody bring in a lower powered amp and try to crank it to get the gain. It's still really... People do record with loud amplifiers, but it's still a challenge. It's really still not an easy thing to do.
Well, see, all the bands at one time went to the big high power stuff, the Sun stuff, the Marshall stuff, and that's great stuff. I mean, absolutely amazing stuff. Guys that single guitar players that play with 25 or 30 15-inch speakers behind them and a half a dozen amp heads that are playing probably through two amp heads with all those speakers. But still, it's gone down to all the bands went to old Fender amps, smaller, had something they control the sound with, had feel to them. When amps turned to be electronic as opposed to tube amps, it changed the sound dramatically. So you had to use pedals on that to get a sound. The old tube amps had their own sound, their own warm sound. It was great. Mm-hmm. So all the bands, Stones, everybody went back to old Fender amps that were old tube amps because they have a really nice warm sound to them.
Yeah.
And then you just mic those and put them out to the PAs. And the PAs, that's another thing that Norm started was the PA systems. Back when we started, they had the Navy cone horns that you talk to and it was like this.
Yeah.
So you didn't hear any of the vocals over mm-hmm. the power of the band. Our drummer used to have to hit his snare drum from above his head. Just an incredible. It broke his thumb one time just hitting the snare drum. But Norm came up with three speakers and put them up on a tripod on each end of the stage. And our first monitors were 15 in a deep cabinet on each side of the stage. That was the original monitors for a band. Never saw anybody that had monitors except Shure microphones.
Right.
Had their own systems, but they didn't have any power, the kind of power we played through. So Norm came up with this thing and they changed it because a cabinet like Norm made was a real deep cabinet, blasted the sound pretty much straight out. So you had one on each side of the stage. Well, there's a whole V in the middle where the people that are sitting in the first dozen rows in the very middle never heard a word.
Right.
Oh, because the sound was going past them on each side. So he created that variable sound. And changed and put a horn and a couple of speakers in there. And so it would crisscross the front of the stage and go out from there. And it was really inventive at the time. Really inventive.
Oh, yeah. That stuff is still used.
Yeah.
It's still a feature. That's really interesting. Did you know, that he was kind of electronically or engineeringly? I don't know if that's not a word.
From day one.
Yeah.
From day one, it got so popular, Sun Amps, that a kid in Kansas City that worked for a music store not only ordered the amps for Kansas City, but Norm was selling them right off the stage, taking orders right off the stage and shipping them to every state there is for a while. And he got that until he had to quit the band to make amplifiers. I mean, it just took so much of his time up.
Yeah.
And so he created that big factory, the warehouse that he had out in Lake Oswego there. And that's all he did for a while until he got tired of that and walked away and gave it to his brother and his dad.
Oh, he just got sick of it.
It just got overwhelming for him and he wanted to do other things. And so since then, he's traveled around the world and had a lot of businesses and done very well.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Well, good.
He's done very well.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, he's a great guy.
I like hearing that.
Yeah, he still lives in Oregon, lives over the other side of the mountain.
Oh, okay.
Oh, cool.
So I feel like I would be in trouble with my listeners if I didn't ask about, this isn't gear related at all, but the controversy around
that's fun.
The Louie Louie.
Oh, the FBI? How fun was that?
Yeah. let's talk about that from your perspective, because that is the craziest sounding thing to me, to most people.
We were sitting in a room back east, and we got a knock on the door. Went and answered the door. Say, I said, who's there? I said, the FBI. Went, what? Okay, come on in. So they came in, interviewed the band and all that. Well, the backstory to that is that we played a lot in Indiana, and they were selling the, when the controversy started in Louisiana, college guys called us and wanted to know what the real lyrics were. But it kind of went around through the colleges, and then they were selling copies of Louis under the counter in brown paper bags. And
right.
Some kid went to his mother and said, "Well, I just bought a copy of this song. It has dirty lyrics."
Oh.
And his mother went to her pastor, who was a good friend of the governor of the state of Indiana. So his best friend was J. Edgar Hoover. So he banned the song in Indiana. Well, they banned it in Massachusetts. Oh, three or four states banned the song. So we had lawsuits against these states for banning a record that we didn't consider to be dirty, just unintelligible. So it went on. The FBI was with us at good old J. Edgar's insistence. He wanted to put us in prison.
Oh, wow.
And we had the FBI with us for a year and a half at every show, standing down next to the speakers, listening, see if we said anything off color, at which time we'd have been ushered off the stage and,
right.
and handcuffed, I'm sure. But they were great guys. If you look at old TV shows of the FBI, the little skinny ties, the black suits.
Yeah.
That's these fits guys to a T. They're great guys. And some of them are still around. We still talk to a couple of them.
Right.
So they, we had a song called Jolly Green Giant.
Yes.
Well, the Green Giant Company, there's an East Coast office and a West Coast office. Well, the East Coast office was suing us, and the West Coast office was selling, or not selling, but sending big 15-foot plastic versions of this Green Giant guy and cases of beans and corn and all of that. The cans.
Right.
Cans, of, yeah, well, we threw ties out, we threw picks out, cufflinks, we, you know, throw them out to the crowd. But you can't throw a can of beans.
not very well.
Yeah, no. Cold cock a little kid. So the FBI guys would pass these cans of beans and corn out to the crowd for us.
That's awesome.
It's incredible. They're great guys. Absolutely great guys. So this went all the way to the top, and a federal judge finally deemed the song unintelligible at any speed and the worst piece of shit he'd ever heard.
Oh.
So we were proud of that.
That's awesome.
J. Edgar Hoover shows up in a dress. Somebody took a picture of him in a red dress. The next day, the FBI guys were gone.
Oh, wow.
Oh, gone.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So somebody, I didn't know that. Somebody took a picture of J. Edgar Hoover,
In a red dress.
Wow.
That's
probably
awesome.
Wouldn't have went over super well.
J. Edgar Hoover lost his job.
Uh-huh.
Well, when you spend that many federal dollars to try to figure out what an unintelligible lyric
that's
is,
exactly right.
You're not exactly efficient
exactly
in your
right.
position.
Yeah.
Oh, he was a powerful man. I mean, he did a lot of stuff. But thanks to him, you know, that whole thing got a conclusion, came to a conclusion, and... there are people that still don't believe that it's not a dirty song in one way or another. Everybody has their own lyrics.
Right, uh-huh. right.
We played colleges, and everybody, girls would get their own lyrics out of their purses. So I never saw any eyes. I always saw it was the top of their heads while they were reading their own lyrics while we were playing the song.
That's so crazy.
Yeah,
like trying to see if they were right?
Yeah, well, their lyrics fit. All kinds of lyrics fit. I've seen hundreds of different lyrics and everything, and they all seem to fit.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, it's really funny.
So the truth of it is that it is just unintelligible.
It's
mumbling.
Unintelligible, and I don't know the real lyrics myself. I'm just a guitar player.
See, that's the best part.
And so, yeah, and now nobody will ever know.
Yeah, straight from the horse's mouth. There you go. That's amazing. Well, yeah, I told you we'd only try to keep you for 30, so. We're right there.
Okay.
I got just a couple more questions.
Okay. I can tell you to start with.
Oh.
For everybody to go to our website, it's current. It's up to date. It's called louislouis.org. O-R-G.
All right.
And it's the official website. Go on there, and you can see the band as we played 4 months ago. That concert or part pictures from that concert are on the website.
Cool.
And it goes clear back to the beginnings. A lot of the TV shows that we did, Shindigs and all of those shows, the Hullabaloos, and everybody had a local TV show. We're all on there. So it's about seven different pages. You can go down and you can, it's an active site. So you can send pictures in, you can text in, email in, and we'd be glad to hear from people that are out there. Send some stuff into the website.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I'll put
you got old pictures and stuff. We'd love to see them.
I'll put the link in the show notes for everybody, so it'll be real easy for them to click over to that and see all of that stuff.
It's a little hard to remember, though.
Yeah. Who could remember that?
Yeah.
But one thing I would like to ask, and this might be interesting because you've been playing music longer than this company's been in existence, but for a lot of my guests, it's always been in their lives basically. But what is your favorite, if you have one, Boss pedal?
I don't have any.
Don't have any.
I don't have any.
No. You did say it was just the boost, but it's a question that I've been trying to work into every podcast, so I had to ask it.
I'd probably play better if I had them. Hmm. My brother plays in the band, and he's got a thing he opens up that's got a dozen pedals in it, and he's always messing with it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's always one thing needs to be turned up or down or adjusted or this or that. One little thing goes out, and the whole thing is a mess. I've got one pedal to deal with.
Yeah.
Simple. I simplify everything at this point in my life.
Yeah. It's not a bad way to do it.
Yeah.
All right. Then this is the question I ask every guest, or it's been a standard question for a long time. And it's the one that everybody waits for. What is your favorite kind of pizza?
Pizza. God. Well, I'm a cheese guy, so I like New York pizza. I love Chicago deep dish. We had that for the first time 30, 40 years ago. Mm-hmm. Our names are signed in some pizza restaurant in Chicago. I like a lot of the homemade pizzas because you add more stuff to them.
Right.
I like cheese.
Yeah, if you're a Chicago deep dish fan, you must like the cheese.
Yeah, I do. Uh-huh. I do.
Cheese is good.
Yeah.
I love it. Love it. That's a good answer. And thanks for taking the time to sit down with us. It's been really fun. And
my pleasure. Thank you.
Won't keep you any longer, but this has been really great. So thank you.
Yeah, thanks, kids. Later. Yeah,
thank you.
All right. For Mike and Jess, this is Blake. And as always, folks, good luck and good tones.
Okay, there you have it. There it is, an episode with Mike Mitchell. Yeah, I had a lot of fun talking to him, and we probably should have just left the mics rolling a little bit because we talked for a decent amount of time afterwards, and I guess he did share some things he didn't really want public, but hey, you know, that's how it goes. If you need more content in your life, you can go to patreon.com/tonemob. We've got extra episodes up there every week. Sometimes it's extended interviews with guests. Sometimes you get sneak previews for things like this. Patreon folks have already listened to this here a few weeks ago. And yeah, there's just all kinds of extra little goodies in there for you if that's your thing. If you could leave us a review on iTunes, that would be fantastic. I mentioned this on the first episode of the day, that anything between now and Friday, the 24th, if you leave a review on iTunes between now and then, you're going to be eligible for a giveaway I'm doing. What am I giving away? Well, I haven't quite figured that out yet. Probably some sort of awesome gear-related thing. That's all I can say at this point. But some of the Facebook group members have already hopped in there and left some fresh reviews. It'd been a while since we did any kind of push on that, so if you guys could slide over there, leave us a review, that would be fantastic. Otherwise, I'll be back next week with more regular tone mobbery and not so much of the funny business that you're experiencing today. But hope you enjoyed it anyway. And if you need anything, you know where to find me. Shoot me an email at info@tonemob.com. Hit me up on the socials, wherever, for whatever. I'll do my best to help. Thank you so much for tuning in. Talk to you next time. One last thing before we totally sign off here. I just want to remind you that if you do any shopping at Stringjoy, that's Stringjoy Guitar Strings made in Nashville, that will help me out as well. As I've said for years, I'm heavily involved in that company, and I really do think they're making the best products on the market. So if you would like to try custom strings, go to tonemob.com/stringjoy and check them out today. I seriously love what the team down there is doing. I help them out with all kinds of things, and by you supporting them, you are also supporting me as well. And hey, you need some strings, so why not get some custom strings just for your guitar and playing style? Again, the link for that is tonemob.com/stringjoy, and that will take you right to their website, and you can do all your shopping through there, and that will help everyone involved out. So thank you very much. Talk to you next time. We are brought to you by the wonderful folks at Gun Street Wiring Shop. Yes, Gun Street Wiring Shop. I've talked about them before. I used to say based out of Bend, Oregon, but guess what? Sean moved to my neck of the woods. Sean's in Portland. Sean is awesome and has helped me with a bunch of stuff lately. And if you have wiring needs for your guitar, he can help you too. If you want to get weird with it, he can get weird. If you just need to spruce things up a little bit, there's your guy. He takes all the guesswork out of doing your guitar wiring, and he makes it simple, and his customer service is top-notch, and I can't say enough good things about Gun Street as a company. I really respect Sean and what he's all about, and the product is top-notch. I've got 3 different guitars that now have Gun Street harnesses in them, and I could not be happier. So go to GunStreetWiringShop.com and check them out.